Well, hello again and welcome to Leading Minds, expert voices from the College of Medicine, Nursing and Health Sciences at NUI Galway. My name is Jonathan McRae. Research at the college aims to improve healthcare regionally, nationally and internationally. And joining us on this week's episode is Professor Timothy O'Brien. He's the established Professor of Medicine and Dean of the College of Medicine, Nursing and Health Sciences here at NUI Galway. He's a consultant endocrinologist at University Hospital Galway. He established the Regenerative Medicine Institute, Remedy, with Professor Frank Barry back in 2004. And he's also co-PI of the SFI-funded Centre for Research in Medical Devices, Curum. He actually has a long list of achievements, but for the purposes of saving his blushes, we'll leave it there. We might get into a bit more of your career as we start the interview. You're very welcome, Tim. How are you?
Thank you, Jonathan. It's a pleasure to be here today. And thank you for taking the time.
Well, one of my most fascinating subjects to talk about that I find is regenerative medicine. And so if you don't mind, I'd love to dive in deep there. So when we talk about regenerative medicine, what are we talking about? We're not talking about growing back limbs, but we are talking about regrowing damaged tissue, right?
Absolutely. It's, in some respects, it's a new paradigm in medicine, which is curative, reparative, and regenerative. So it's an attempt to restore diseased tissue to normal. A lot of our conventional therapeutic approaches for chronic diseases, in particular the chronic degenerative diseases, will involve maybe more palliative approach where the diseased tissue remains and you try to deal with the symptoms. So regenerative medicine is an approach which is designed and directed at healing the underlying disease.
So give me a for example. Are you talking about bone, cartilage, muscle, blood?
Yeah. So there's hardly an area of medicine actually that isn't touched by this new paradigm, as I've called it, at this point. Now, much of the state of development is research and experimental, and there are some therapies that have gone all the way through to approval. But bone and cartilage are certainly high up there in terms of regenerative technologies. Heart, blood vessels, the beta cells that make insulin in the body. So these are some of the targets, the liver. These are some of the targets to regenerate diseased tissue.
Now, I'm no doctor, but I know that the liver is a fairly homogenous and easier organ to work with, I would imagine, than something like the heart, which has a lot of activity and also really requires strong fibers and strong muscles to work properly. Presumably, there are some areas which are easier to work with and some where there are lots of challenges that involve things like engineering as well as developing the medical parts of it.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, Jonathan. It's, in some respects, if you were to ask which is the most difficult tissue organ to try and regenerate, the kidney is up there because there's so many different types of cells in there and topography and shape. And, so bringing all that together is quite challenging. Obviously, the brain would be very challenging. The liver is inherently has pretty good regenerative capacity itself. And certainly people who are working on kind of liver regeneration, the thoughts are in terms of liver failure, where patients have advanced liver disease and might be candidates for liver transplantation, but there may not be an organ available. So some of the early research might be to try and bridge that gap and have liver tissue that would be a bit like dialysis as a bridge. And then, of course, there are a longer term hope would be to regenerate the organ, either in situ or regenerate it in the laboratory and implant it. So there's two aspects to kind of regenerative approaches. One might be within the body, so you put in cells or genes or materials to try and enhance repair and regeneration locally. The other would be, and probably a bit more challenging, to grow an organ, so to speak, in the laboratory and transplant it.
Wow. We're quite away from that, I would imagine.
I think the latter we are, but the former, where we're talking about trying to regenerate cartilage, for instance, I mean, there are cartilage regenerative therapeutic products on the market. And cartilage is an interesting tissue. I mean, it's actually Frank Barry's area of direct interest. And cartilage is very thin. It's got no blood supply. It's got a small number of cells, and it regenerates very poorly. So if you have a skiing accident, or you damage your knee or your hip, the cartilage, it repairs very poorly. So, you know, trying to put in constructs which may have materials to repair the damaged cartilage is an area that's advanced actually quite a bit. There's a number of products. So it's gone all the way through. I describe the phases of development as discovery science, translational science, and then clinical application. So in various organ systems in the body, we've advanced all the way to clinical application in cartilage, but we're still at maybe even discovery science, the earliest stages in brain regeneration, for instance.
When we talk about regeneration of damaged tissue, what necessitates regeneration? Are you talking about cell death or breakage? And maybe you might give us a visual example of what that looks like, drawing on some of the research you're working on at the moment.
I think we initially had a concept of, I say the field had a concept of using stem cells to become the damaged tissue. Now there would be a need to clear the damaged tissue and replace with the stem cells, and that approach of putting in stem cells and replacing or regenerating tissue was the initial concept. Now it's known that when you inject stem cells, for instance, they may not become the tissue of source where you're injecting them, but they make factors that promote healing and promote endogenous repair and regeneration. So I kind of draw a distinction there between the concept of putting a stem cell in, which you want to become a brain cell or heart cell, or you want the cell to modulate the local environment, resulting in repair and regeneration. They're two separate ways of doing things, but in the approved cartilage products or improved surface wound healing products, it's essentially cells on a material which are placed into the defect is one approach. And then the cells can either become cartilage cells, or they can secrete products which allow repair of endogenous cartilage stem cells.
Right. I see. Sort of like a probiotic in a way, rather than that. I always think of stem cells as a blank Scrabble piece, that you put it in and it becomes the letter that you want it to become. But actually what you're saying is that they can actually kind of create the environment that encourages normal cell growth. I hadn't realized that. So presumably then there is an issue on how you infuse this particular area with these stem cells. You need some sort of vessel, medium, or structure a lot of the time to hang these cells in, so they don't just disappear in waste, right?
There are again different challenges in terms of delivery. I'm a diabetologist, so I look after patients with diabetic foot ulcers, and that area would be, you know, seemingly less complex in that you can just deliver to the surface of the wound. Whereas if you want to get to joints or the heart or the brain, and I think our involvement in Corum, which is a medical device research center, is kind of focused on that area as well, how to deliver the cells to the site of disease.
You're saying we're already at a stage where we can sort of, like putting butter on toast, wipe, you know, stem cells on a site and actually foster regrowth?
We can put stem cells on a material and apply the stem cell material combination to a site of injury. That could be a bone defect, a cartilage defect, a skin defect in a surface wound. And so when initially regenerative medicine was almost equated with stem cell medicine, but now there are other technologies which are coming together with stem cells, and they include biomaterials, major focus of Corum, and gene therapy, gene modification, and medical devices. So the paradigm of regenerative medicine will involve delivery of biomaterial and cell gene combinations in many cases. It won't be as simple as let's just put one stem cell type into the area of injury and think it'll heal. And that it's really, we talk about advanced therapy medicinal products. They're called ATMPs, and ATMPs are cells, genes, materials, devices, combinations thereof. They're combination therapies, which are challenging even for the regulator, because we're used to thinking about a product, a drug, a cell, a gene, but here we might be trying to develop a scaffold, a biomaterial scaffold upon which are placed cells which have been genetically modified. So they're complex, maybe hybrid therapeutics.
Can you give me a bit more detail on the genetic side of it? Because I hadn't thought about using genes to regenerate by modifying cells so that they create certain proteins or whatever. Can you take me a little bit through that, if you don't mind?
Yeah, we, there's a lot of evidence now in mainly in the discovery science area, in the kind of preclinical area, but moving through the three phases that I mentioned in some areas, where if you genetically modify a cell, you can alter its properties to enhance its therapeutic benefit. And I suppose CAR T cells, which are now making very significant progress in cancer, might be an example of that. They're a genetically modified cell that makes a targeted cancer therapeutic. It's kind of an immunotherapy. It's a combination of cells and genes.
Yeah.
Not necessarily stem cells, but cells, genes to target the cancer. So genetic modification of cells has enormous potential in terms of enhancing the properties of the cell.
Speaking of cells, you have a cell manufacturing facility as one of the other things that you're involved with. Can you tell me a little bit about that? What is the use of it? What sort of cell lines you're working on, and what sort of research is undergoing there?
It's a very important part of our infrastructure, our ecosystem here. It's the only facility in Ireland that is a licensed facility to manufacture cells for human application. And in our research here in Remedy and Corum and Galway, our main disease targets are arthritis, diabetes and their complications, vascular disease, and neuronal disease. So the fact that we have a facility that is managed by Andrew Finnerty, who's our general manager of our GMP facility, and it's licensed by the regulator, the HPRA, to manufacture cells for human application, it allows discovery science to enter the translational science pathway, which is the pathway to clinical application. And we couldn't do it without that. So we've managed to get maybe 10 European consortia awards by virtue of the presence of the GMP facility, as I call GMP, good manufacturing practice. It's a means of growing cells under very tightly regulated conditions. Because remember, if you grow a cell and you're ready to put it into a human, you can't end sterilize it. You can't, zap it to get rid of a microorganism. So you have to grow it in a completely sterile environment, very carefully, environmentally controlled.
So you're going to have to step back a bit here, because when you say manufacturing cells, I'm trying to imagine why you would want to do that, and how you manufacture a cell, and why I mean, there is obviously different types of cells that do different things, but probably not all the sort of cells you find naturally in a human body. Can you take me through the concept of this center and what cells you're doing and how?
The main cell we're doing is the mesenchymal stromal cell, the mesenchymal cell, MSC, it's called. It can be derived from bone marrow, and it has the capacity to become bone or cartilage. So it's of interest in that direct methodology in bone and cartilage repair. But the cell also has the ability to make factors which enhance the local healing environment, promoting tissue repair and regeneration. So that's the main cell that we work with at the moment in terms of our translational science. We have multiple cell types that we work at in terms of our discovery science, but in terms of translation, clinical trials, for instance. So we take a bone marrow sample, or we take an umbilical cord, or we take adipose tissue, liposuction, some fat. And there are three sources of MSCs. And when you isolate the initial sample, the very small number of the cells you want. So what you actually have to do is expand them. So when I speak of manufacturing, it's more a concept of expansion and starting with a tiny number of kind of endogenous cells and growing them up over 2 to 3 weeks in this facility where you know, we have all seen PPE in COVID time. Well, the people who work in the GMP facility are fully PPE donned. There can be no transmission of microorganisms. Yeah. To the cell product, because as I said, you can't end sterilize your product.
So just to be clear on this, because I find this absolutely fascinating, Tim, are you taking those cells out of another person who will then be treated with those cells? Is that the idea? You take it out, you culture the ones you want, and then so it's a personalized therapy per patient?
We have two, I'm sorry, in many questions, there's kind of two pathways or two paradigms, two ways of doing this. I mean, one is autologous, where you take it from the patient and put it back into the patient once it's now been expanded. And it could be genetically modified. It could be biomaterially enhanced. And then the other way is called allogeneic, where we take cells from one individual, might be a young, healthy individual, and give them to a diseased individual. So I've finished a trial recently, a clinical trial of what we call critical limb ischemia. It's a condition where the blood supply to the leg is no longer enough to maintain tissue viability. So amputation is kind of the risk. And in that study, I used autologous approach. I took bone marrow from the patients themselves, then grew them up to large numbers in the GMP facility, and then put them back into the legs to see if we could restore blood flow, regenerate new blood vessels. So that's an autologous approach. Frank Barry has an autologous study on osteoarthritis where he takes...
Oh, wait. Did you manage to succeed with that, Tim? I mean...
Well, that was a phase 1B study, we call it. It's a pilot feasibility. Can we do it? Is it safe? So we published the results of that study in Cytotherapy, which is one of the cell therapy journals of the International Society of Cell Therapy. And essentially what we showed was that it's possible, it's feasible, and it's safe in that phase one. The next stage then is to do a phase two with larger numbers and controls, and then a phase three. That's the translational science pathway, which follows the discovery science, where you prove in laboratory systems that this is a valid approach. So we've got discovery science to translational science and ultimately to clinical application if the translational science proves safety and efficacy.
Yeah, that must be so exciting to be working on these sort of areas. You mentioned diabetes, and I know this is a big area of concern and a specialism in NUI-Goli and with yourself. Can you talk to me a little bit about the challenges of diabetes at the moment? Obviously, it's a growing condition across the world. What are the things you're focusing on in terms of treating and presumably hoping to reverse diabetes as well?
So we have two kind of programs in particular in the regenerative space around diabetes. And they would be to try and make new beta cells and transplant them and so-called cure diabetes by replacing the cell type. The other part of our program is the treatment of the complications of diabetes. So we've a number of clinical trials that we've brought the discovery science into the translational science area. And we have a number of clinical trials in diabetic complications, like the diabetic foot ulcer. That was one of our European consortia. The diabetic kidney, and Matt Griffin, who's a professor of transplant biology here in Galway, runs the trial on, we call it NephStrom. It's to use stromal cells as a strom to treat nephropathy, which is kidney disease. So we have a complications program where we're trying to use MSCs, the cell I mentioned earlier, and we're trying to explore whether they'll enhance wound healing, vascular regeneration, kidney regeneration. Now, the other area to me is really exciting, which is, can we make beta cells, which is the factory that makes insulin? So all of us who are fortunate enough not to have diabetes have beta cells, which make insulin in response to glucose. So how do we, and they're destroyed by an immune rejection process in type 1 diabetes, which is the kind of juvenile onset, the younger type onset. Now there's a new stem cell technology, which Professor Sanbing Shen, who's a professor of fundamental stem cell biology here in Galway, directs. It's called induced pluripotent stem cells. So if you bear with me just a little while, I'll try to explain what that is. And in essence, it is you take a skin biopsy and take out a fibroblast, and then you can convert that fibroblast to what we call a pluripotent cell. That's a cell which can become any cell of the body. Pluri is many, many potent. So it can become any cell type in the body. So we have a program now in Galway where Sanbing Shen takes fibroblasts from skin and he converts them to pluripotency. And then we can drive them down a number of different lineages. So we have a group like Sanbing himself is interested in autism. Our professor of pediatrics, Nicholas Allen, is interested in refractory epilepsy. So they're brain applications. So we're converting the pluripotent cell into brain cells for them. We've got heart products with our pediatric cardiology colleagues in Dublin, converting the pluripotent cell to heart cells. And then on the beta cell front, Professor Gary Duffy, who's a professor here in Galway in anatomy, he has an interest in creating beta cells from IPS and delivering them to patients with diabetes. Now, that field in diabetes, in the diabetes world, has now advanced into the first human, the phase one of the translational science with embryonic stem cells. So you take an embryo, isolate embryonic stem cells, and convert them to beta cells. The first human report appeared in the literature very recently from the US using an embryonic stem cell to create a beta cell.
Did that result in elimination of diabetes?
It's a phase one study, a bit like, and it's a reasonable question, Jonathan, in the translational
science. I know you're worried about journalists jumping ahead but as a phase one, it looks very promising, does it?
What they showed in that study was that the cells, up to a year after implantation, were still making insulin. Wow. They didn't cure diabetes, but they showed, again, feasibility, safety, tolerability, and now they'll move in to do a larger phase two. Unfortunately, okay. This whole area is not an overnight area. And I'm very conscious of patients and not overhyping technologies, because there is a pathway that has to be undergone, the discovery science, translational science, phase one, two, three. But the beta cell work to me has shown that if we can do the same with IPS derived beta cells, then that's a much less contentious way of making beta cells than having to do embryonic.
For sure. Yeah. And it opens the door wide open if if it all works out as we continue that testing, it could be really, really exciting. It seems to me that you have so many different facilities and specialisms in Galway that it makes it a really exciting place to do research, because you've got this cell manufacturing capability, you have different disciplines, and this new brand of research that's maybe really come to the fore over the last couple of decades of multidisciplinary research. NUI Galway seems to be a really good place for that. Would you say that's the case?
I would, Jonathan, and I'd say it with, you know, I came from the US 20 years ago, so I worked at the Mayo Clinic, and the Mayo Clinic has kind of prioritized three principal areas of research, the Center for Regenerative Medicine at Mayo Clinic being one of them. So I've seen what major institutions worldwide can do. I've no doubt that we can do the same. And I think that comes from the university in Galway. Before I ever came here, Pat Fottrell's time, he was the president, and subsequently Iggy O'Meara Hertig, Jim Brown, and now Ciarán Ócáidigh. There's been a process of prioritization. Now, when you prioritize your research areas, then you can create critical mass and multidisciplinarity in those critical areas. And Galway made that decision, I think, in the mid-1990s, that rather than be more diffuse and try to do everything, the institution at least, and that ties into med tech and medical technology and devices and the decisions made by the leadership of NUI Galway down through the years. So now we have the total infrastructure required to take, in regenerative medicine, which is my own area of interest, to take discovery science through translational science and bring it into clinical application. The latter part of that process, critically dependent upon the engagement with industry. Spin-out companies, which all of us in Remedy have been involved in, and Corum, of course, spin-out companies, partnership with multinationals, partnerships with local SMEs. And so I think in Galway, we have the ecosystem, we have the people, and we have the desire, ambition, and enthusiasm to do what in essence is our main target, which is to enhance the quality of life of patients who suffer from these conditions.
It sounds like you have the right stuff in Galway, and this culture of innovation with medical devices that, of course, Galway is famous for. I'm going to ask you a tricky question now, and that is, do we have the right infrastructure and health service and health system in Ireland to take that to the next level when it comes to these clinical trials and so on? Do you see the research that you're doing at the moment, is there an outlet for the next stage, which is, of course, clinical trials within the country benefiting patients in real terms?
Yeah, I think we do, Jonathan. I think... you know, my job is 50% in the health service and 50% in the university. So I spend half my time looking after patients in the hospital. I do both general medicine, endocrinology, and maybe a specific interest in diabetology, because that's the target of my research as well, I suppose. And half my time is in the university teaching and doing research. I'm proud of our health service. I'm proud of the hospital I work in. I realize it's not perfect. I realize there are deficiencies in trolleys and access and I hope Sláinte Care and plans along those lines will enhance that. But we have an outstanding clinical trial infrastructure created by the Health Research Board. And then we have outstanding support from Science Foundation Ireland. We have access to the EU. We have access to Wellcome Trust. Mm. We're now part of international networks, like our GMP facility, which we referred to earlier, is part of a network in Europe. And we make product under common SOPs across multiple centres in Europe. So our HRB clinical research facility here, directed by Professor Andrew Smith, who's a kidney specialist by training, has the ability to do the clinical trials that we're actually doing. I'm not saying that we have the capacity to do things that we haven't done yet. I mean, we're doing them. So and we have outstanding nurse research nurses, and so I'm passionate about the health service. I'm passionate about you know, being at my age, I'm going to be a service user more and more. Right now, I'm a service provider, but I will transition. That's not the reason I'm passionate about the health service. But I think we there are great things happening in this health service every day that there's not little attention paid to, and there's a lot of attention paid to the problems. So, you know, I don't want to say let's only focus on the good things, but let's give credit to many of the good things that happen. And I worked here through COVID in the last 18, 24 months. I saw my ICU colleagues in nursing. I saw my infectious disease colleagues. I saw all of my colleagues in this hospital respond in to me a manner that makes me proud of this health service.
Well, it sounds like there's something quite special happening at NUI Galway, and it's amazing to hear about this research, which, you know, 20 years ago may have been the subject of science fiction, and now it's sort of science fact. Professor Timothy O'Brien, it's really been a great pleasure speaking with you. Thanks very much.
Likewise, Jonathan. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Leading Minds from the School of Medicine, Nursing and Health Sciences at NUI Galway. We'll see you in the next episode.